This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga, and here is what's coming up.
Strengthen our bond with the United States of America, and also put us out there on the map would bring so much attention to us.
That's Benedicta Okpoch in Ghana sharing her hopes about U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris's visit today. We'll hear more Harris' trip to Africa in the show. Also, Kenyans worry about the violence at some protests yesterday, and the U.S. shapes a new strategy to help Libya. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight.
America will be guided.
In Ghana today, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris said the United States would be a partner with African nations. Speaking to thousands of mostly young Ghanaians today, she also urged Africans to work to empower women and younger people so that they can play their full part in the future of the world.
America will be guided not by what we can do for our African partners, but what we can do with our African partners.
Ghana is her first stop on her three-nation tour of Washington's efforts to strengthen relationships with African nations. Standing in front of Black Star Gate, a monument built on the site where Ghana declared independence from Britain in 1957, Harris noted that by the middle of the century, one in four people in the world will be African. She said that means on the continent will affect the entire world. She urged her audience to foster innovation and creativity.
And so we must invest in the African ingenuity and creativity, which will unlock incredible economic growth and opportunities, not only for the people of the 54 countries that make up this diverse continent, but for the American people and people around the world.
Later in the day, Harris visited the Cape Coast Castle, a UNESCO World Heritage Site that thousands of Africans passed through onto slave ships to Europe and the Americas. Robert Kent Mensah spoke with Ghanaians about Vice President Kamala Harris's trip to hear their thoughts. Benedicta Okop says the visit could bring economic benefits.
The Vice President of United States of America's visit to Ghana would help us strengthen our bond with the United States of America, and also put us out there on the map, would bring so much attention to us in such a way that other developing countries would also like to get into trading with us. And then also those who are more like allies with the U.S. would also want to show interest in us in other forms.
Daniel Dompre says he's encouraged that Harris says the U.S. will help bolster regional security.
The fact that they are interested in promoting security, it's also going to help draw in development, investment, you know, tourism and other aspects of life, which will help, you know, the Ghanaian economy rise from the current state. Yeah, so I believe it's a good cause.
Tomorrow evening, Harris arrives in Tanzania, and later in the week, she travels to Zambia. The U.S. Vice President is one of several top government figures to visit the continent this year. Earlier this month, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was in Niger, and last month, First Lady Jill Biden visited Kenya and Namibia. Ghana's military, meanwhile, is training to crack down on illegal overfishing in the Gulf of Guinea, much of it by Chinese-owned boats. But China holds great influence in the region, and some Ghanaian naval officials say a crackdown might cause friction with Beijing. Henry Wilkins reports from Accra, Ghana.
Chokor is a fishing village in the Ghanaian capital of Accra. Here, fishermen eke out a living on the shores of the Gulf of Guinea. Gulf of Guinea countries, however, could be losing up to $2.3 billion annually to illegal fishing, says the Institute for Security Studies, a South African think tank. Much of it is carried out by boats with Ghanaian flags, but according to the non-profit Environmental Justice Foundation, 90% of these boats have Chinese owners. Ni Gabordzwi is a Chawkor community leader. He spoke to VOA about how illegal trawling is damaging the village's livelihood. He says that the fishing trawlers are a big worry for us, the artisanal fishermen, and that they must be prevented from fishing in the shallow waters that we normally draw from. These big trawlers are not supposed to be here. If they cannot be stopped, he says, they must be sent to areas far away in the deep seas. As coastal communities like Chawkor continue to struggle, troops from Ghana's Navy have been taking part in a joint training exercise with US forces, focusing on maritime security. Ghanaian officials said tackling illegal fishing is a priority. Asked if a more militarized response to Chinese-owned fishing boats could cause tension with China, which holds great influence in the region, Commodore Godwin Bessing from Ghana's Navy said it might.
It could be a potential source of friction. And as I speak to you now, there are some of the ships that have received some infractions not to go into our waters. And quite a number of them have already left Ghanaian waters to go and fish elsewhere.
Environmentalists point out that complicity between Chinese-owned vessels and in West African officials is also driving illegal fishing.
Chinese agencies in driving the illegal fishing have engaged in corrupt practices, and that has included the bribery of officials, including military officials, naval officials. So we've seen the exchange of boxes of fish going into a junior military rank person's car, for example, in exchange for turning a blind eye. I've personally witnessed it.
The Chinese embassy in Ghana did not respond to a VOA request for comments. Kofi Agboga is the director of Hen Mapuano, a Ghana-based non-profit focused on fisheries governance. He says the West African fishing ministers he has spoken to say China is unwilling to help solve the problem.
What I get from them, that the Chinese tell them, is that the problem is not a China problem, it is a Ghanaian problem, and that we have to look at our laws carefully and then do the needful.
Gabordzi says the Chinese trawlers' use of fine mesh nets means the smaller fish that fishermen like him would normally catch are disappearing. The government has managed to stop some of these trawlers, but that is not enough, he says. He says that they should all be cleared from our seas. That's the only way we can get some peace. Meanwhile, the fishermen catch what fish they can. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA, radio and TV programs, and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. U.S. President Joe Biden recently sent to Congress a new strategy to prevent conflict and promote stability in six African countries, including Libya. According to a statement from the U.S. White House, the new strategy focuses on laying the foundations for an elected national government in Libya that is capable of governing, providing services, and maintaining security. Biden's strategy also includes access to security, justice, accountability, and reconciliation in Libya, and efforts for disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration in reference to armed groups. Wolfgang Puzai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed this U.S. involvement with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi.
First, I need to stress that the fact that Libya is on the strategy list of priority partner countries is not an indication that Libya's overall priority for the United States has increased. There are also countries like Papua New Guinea and Mozambique on this list. However, the strategy certainly underlines that Libya is still on the American agenda. The White House has defined, as you've explained before, concrete strategic objectives they want to pursue and achieve in close cooperation with the Libyan partners. So that's certainly a positive message to the Libyans. And I would say most of the Libyans would also sign up to these objectives. Altogether, I would consider this strategy an encouragement for the Libyans to do more to achieve these objectives with quite some American help.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken commented on the latest initiative by the U.N. Special Envoy to Libya, Abdullahi Bathily, to pave the way for elections, and he said there is an important moment where through the work of the U.N. Envoy, there may be, and I emphasized may be, a path forward to moving Libya in a better direction, including getting election for legitimate government, and our diplomats are deeply engaged in that. How significant is U.S. engagement in that matter?
Secretary Blinken's very careful wording clearly indicates that also the United States is not sure about the chances for success for the Bathily initiative. But without this U.S. engagement, without this U.S. endorsement and ongoing support for Bathily, the prospects for the initiative are certainly very dire, next to nil, I would say. Very carefully said, Bathily's poorly coordinated initiative is in serious troubles. Right after his announcement, the rival parliaments agreed on the 13th amendment to the Constitutional Declaration and planned for a 5+5 committee, which would solve all the major open questions and draft election laws. Especially, they should agree about the criteria for candidates for presidency. I doubt that this will happen. Nevertheless, Bathily demanded that all this must happen until June, so all the election laws must be drafted by June. And threatened again that in the other case, so in the case the election laws are not ready, he would seek for alternatives without stressing what these alternatives could be. Altogether, I would say this has a much lower credibility compared with his statements before the announcement of this initiative. Remarkably, in New York, he was talking about the high-level steering panel for Libya. And when he talked again in Libya about his initiative, he talked only about a high-level panel for elections. You see the difference.
So apart from U.S. backing of the U.N. initiative, what could make it work?
I would say the best way ahead right now is to push this 5+5 committee to agree on some criteria for the presidential candidate. But this must be accompanied in parallel with discussions with those who need to agree to this outcome, namely LNA commander Khalifa Haftar, to Prime Minister Dabeiba, and to the military and political leaders in Misrata.
That was Wolfgang Puzai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya. He spoke with my colleague Mohamed Al-Shanawi. Kenyans today are reacting to yesterday's widespread protests. The African Union is calling for calm and political dialogue after some anti-government protests turned violent. On Monday, the police fired tear gas in Nairobi and the city of Kisumu to disperse crowds protesting high inflation and the election win of President William Ruto last year over rival Raila Odinga. International and Kenya news media say at least one protester was killed yesterday. Many Kenyans were particularly shocked when supporters of President Ruto attacked a farm owned by former President Uhuru Kenyatta. In Nairobi, reporter Mohamed Yusuf spoke with people for their thoughts on the protests. Abel Kipkoech says things got out of hand.
We also witnessed a few people losing their lives. And of course, when you are fighting for a better livelihood, I think one of the things that you should be taken care of is life. But when life is lost, I feel like we've lost the whole idea. The invasion of the Uhuru family, I think that was uncalled for. Just because he's supporting the opposition, as people claim this was the main reason why it was invaded, I feel like that is going against the very law we claim to be, the very constitution we claim to be supporting.
Kibui Karita says while many people are unhappy with conditions in the country, protesters need to rethink their actions.
And I think what needs to be done going forward is they need to treat each other with equal levels of respect. I don't disagree with the message that the protesters have, but the economy still needs to move forward. So balancing out your interest while still taking care of others, I feel, would be the best way of approaching it. And that's evident also with the invasion of Kenyatta's farm. I don't know how you want to be taken seriously if you resort to the very things that you're complaining about. If you're complaining about stealing, you should not revenge and thus steal.
Odinga and other opposition groups have called for a series of protests every Monday and Thursday. We will be following events on our VOA programs and on voaafrica.com. Anti-government protests rocked several African nations in the past few weeks, including Kenya, Nigeria, Senegal, South Africa, and Tunisia. Demonstrators protested a range of grievances, including lack of democracy, inflation, alleged electoral abuses, and government corruption and mismanagement. Some analysts are asking if it's the start of some kind of Arab Spring in Africa. Darren Taylor reports.
Some seasoned African political analysts say the protests could signify a democratic reawakening on the continent. They also say rebellions against sitting presidents could be the beginning of a new cycle of violence in Africa. Anti-government protesters have vented their anger against rulers' failure to improve their lives.
What we are seeing is the state versus its citizens.
Sipho Mantulai is a human rights lawyer and researcher at the Thabo Mbeki School of International Affairs in Johannesburg. He says Africa's youthful population is an important factor in the latest protests.
If one looks at the African continent, I think this is a ripe time. This is the time where one will recall the times of Sankara, the times of Samora Machel, those times of Lumumba. So I think this is the energy that comes. That bulk of youth population are the ones who will be causing this revolution, and they will be raising this.
Mantula says many African citizens don't trust their governments. He points out the results of most elections on the continent are questioned, and some are blatantly rigged. He says ruling parties have an attitude of power at all costs. He notes that several have amended laws or constitutions to allow sitting presidents to remain in office for long periods. So Mantula says African citizens have many legitimate grievances.
We have bad governance in the African continent. We have corruption. We have gross human rights violations that are also committed by the law enforcement officials. What happened in 1960, the only difference that we'll see in 2023 is that it's many African governments that are in power that are the ones unleashing maximum force to the people who are even contesting against this power. Hence, I said, we must expect all these civil protests. They are all about unjust laws. They are all about unjust policies.
Mantula says change in Africa is inevitable because the current crop of leaders is, as he puts it, sleeping on their riches and out of touch with younger citizens. But University of Stellenbosch African Affairs expert Advocate Thuli Madonsela says in some cases opposition parties are taking unfair advantage of social problems.
There they are using our people as cannon fodder, making them empty promises that by marching for one day, your life is going to be changed. They're doing the same thing in Kenya, demanding the president who's just ascended to power must resign and blaming all manner of things on him.
Recent large protests in South Africa and Kenya were organized by opposition leaders who called their supporters to the streets. In other countries, such as Sudan, civil society groups and labor unions have led protests. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
West Africa's Sahel region saw mounting violence and a rollback in free expression last year, a rights group Amnesty International says in its latest annual report released today. For VOA, Lisa Brandt has more on the findings from Paris.
Amnesty International says that for Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger, 2022 was an especially grim year. The countries saw an uptick in civilian killings compared to 2021 as they battle an ongoing jihadi insurgency in the region.
We are talking about 9,000 civilians killed due to the conflict, an increase of 54% compared to 2021.
Ousmane Diallo is Sahel researcher for Amnesty's Dakar office. He says governments in these three countries are increasingly disregarding human rights. One big thing that's changed in the region over 2022, reports of the growing presence in some places of the Wagner Group, a private Russian mercenary company. Mali and Burkina Faso have also seen coup d'etats over the past 2 years.
I think there is certainly a strong link between these military takeovers and some of the abuses of human rights. And I want to specifically cite here freedom of expression and press freedom in Mali and in Burkina Faso that have been under attack by this military government.
Diallo gives the example of Malian journalist Malik Konate, who was forced into exile after reportedly shooting footage for French TV that showed Wagner's presence in Mali.
The situation of Malik Konate is not a unique one, but many other actors, whether journalists, whether human rights defenders, or even political actors, have been forced to exile due to these attacks against freedom of expression and press freedom.
Even Senegal, considered one of West Africa's most successful democracies, has lost points, Diallo says, when it comes to civil liberties. Its president, Macky Sall, is considering running for a third term, which the opposition asserts would be unconstitutional.
The situation in Senegal has dramatically worsened over the last 2 years. We have seen a lot of abuses against freedom of peaceful assembly, whether the right to protest by the opposition, by civil society members, is often rejected by administrative authorities due to risk of disturbing public order without giving any specifics about it, but also freedom of expression and press freedom.
Amnesty also criticizes forced deportations under agreements aimed to control migration, including Algeria's expulsion of thousands of sub-Saharan African migrants to northern Niger in recent years. Reports say many are dumped into the desert with little food or water. Algeria denies such accusations, calling them malicious. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Simpoga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbio Yebro, and our engineer tonight, Zainab Abdulrahman, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.